Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 233, recorded November 3rd, 2011. Connect this. Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. Being in IT and not using the right tools can be disastrous. That's why you need GoToAssist Express, the leader in remote support. Try it free. Visit GoToAssist.com/Windows. And by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers your Microsoft needs in great obsessive depth. Here they are, our Windows Weekly duo, the dynamic duo of Microsoft knowledge.
Are you scratching my chin?
on the left, from Mandalay Bay. This feels like a boxing event. Weighing in at God only knows 20 pounds less than it was.
This weekend, there's a big fight.
There's always a big fight, and Mandalay Bay is one of the big venues. Mr. Paul Thurrott of Windows Supersite, Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Author of Windows Phone Secrets, so he's a real great expert on Windows Phone, and always a joy and a pleasure to hang out with. To his right.
I have no problem with anything you've said so far.
I'll check her chin. Mary Jo Foley of ZDNet Blogs and allaboutmicrosoft.com. And we are here to talk about the latest news from Redmond. Actually, the news today is from Helsinki.
Close enough.
Where is actually Nokia in Finland?
Yes.
So it would be Helsinki. The Windows.
Although they had their event in London.
Yeah.
As Mary Jo knows.
And their president is from the U.S.
Canada.
Right? I know he's a Microsoft, former Microsoftie.
Yep. Yeah, but he's a Canuck.
So he's announced that Windows Phone handsets in the U.S. will be coming when, Paul Thurrott?
Oh, did they announce that?
I don't know. Didn't they? Please?
Well,
I want my Lumia 800.
You know what I want, actually, is not the Lumia 800, but an improved version of the Lumia 800. I'd like to see them address some of the complaints that people have about that. You know, that it only comes with 16 gigs of storage. There's no front-facing camera. There's no gyroscope, apparently. I think it's a nice, solid device. It's a beautiful-looking device, absolutely. And it is one of those things that's really high quality. You know, look and feel to it. But, God, all I get is complaints about this thing now, you know? And it's not just that we can't get it immediately. It's that, you know, I think that combined with the fact that you can't get it immediately, people tend to dwell on the specs. And the more they dwell on the specs, the more idgety they get about the things that are missing, you know? So I'm kind of, I don't know, Mary Jo, if you caught any wind of this, but there's some mystery about whether that's the device or one of the devices that's coming to the U.S., and if so, whether it will be a modified version or just the original one.
Yeah, I've been hearing that too. And when we asked last week at Nokia World, they would not say for sure that the Lumia 800 is what's going to come to the U.S. And I'm thinking no. I mean, they're definitely, I would think, going to add a front-facing camera if it's not, you know, if the device is until next year. And then there have been a couple of reviews coming out this week of the Lumia 800 kind of saying the camera is okay, but not like the amazing thing that you thought it was going to be because of Nokia's camera expertise.
Yeah, Nokia set the expectation.
Right.
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 And then even the name. I mean, doesn't the name sound like a camera, the Lumia?
Well, it has Carl Zeiss optics.
Yeah.
You know, it has a better, I don't know what the correct term is, like an f-stop or a aperture setting.
A faster aperture, yeah. 2.2.
Right, so we've all been kind of pinning our hopes on this because, you know, one of the things I've determined, I bought a point-and-click camera this past year and sort of vowed that this will be the last camera I buy. you know, that I fully expect within the next, you know, 6 to 12 months to be able to buy any camera, or I'm sorry, any, you know, high end smartphone and have that camera be good enough.
Yes.
You know,
it's interesting. That's why one of the reasons Apple did the iPhone, I'm reading the Steve Jobs bio and they talk about this, is because people were going to stop using cameras. They were going to stop using iPods. It was all going to be in the phone, and they didn't, and they realized they needed to have, be in that space that in 2007, they saw this coming.
Yeah.
And of course, cameras have gotten so good now.
Right. And it's amazing because, you know, these are very thin devices. The camera optics have to be tiny.
And yet
some of them are very good. My understanding is that, I think it's the HTC Titan has an excellent camera. And of course, the iPhone 4S does. I think some of the new Droid phones that have
they're all 8 megapixels.
Probably are okay. I've not really tested any of those.
They are. I would say they're. You know, I have the Galaxy 2 S2, and it's on a par with the iPhone.
The thing that makes these very important.
Oh yeah, and because you have software and connectivity in this device, you've got a GPS, you've got you're online, and you got software.
I'd rather have a good camera than a good phone. In the phone.
If that makes sense.
In other words, I would put up with crappy phone calls if that camera was excellent.
Welcome to my world.
I know
world,
that's
Paul.
Not the trade-off, but I mean,
iPhone 4 ownership.
No, well, that's welcome to smartphone ownership. I mean, a lot of smartphones are not great phones. That's just the way it is. You know, the iPhone, by and large, has never been a great phone. Although, my experience with the newest one is actually very good. So maybe this one is bucking the trend. But for me, you know, out and about in the world, I don't really talk to people on the phone a lot. And when I do, it's for a very short period of time. The other functionality, you know, its ability to do the locations and stuff and the check-ins and, you know, and the camera stuff is more important to me. And I think it is to other people as well.
Well, you know, I didn't realize that the Lumia was, but I think you're right. I think maybe we're going to benefit from having Lumia 800 Part 2 in the U.S. in 2012. Maybe that's why they were delaying. Maybe they wanted to do this.
Maybe. I mean, the one that everyone thinks is going to be in the U.S. is the Lumia 710, which is the lower end of the two models that they introduced.
And that'll be, you mean before the end of the year?
No, next year also.
We may not get the 800?
The 710.
We may not get the 800. But see, we know that we're going to get multiple phones on multiple carriers, so it won't just be the 710. It will be the 710 plus something else.
Some other thing.
How could they not do the 800 in the U.S.?
Well, more important, how could they not be clear about what they are doing?
Yes. You know? I mean, surely they know about now.
If they don't do the 800, they'll do the 900 or something, right? I mean, they're going to have a high-end phone for the U.S.
Okay.
Yeah.
The 900 would
be question is whether it is literally an 800 or a modified version of the 800.
Got it.
Something completely new.
So. I mean, there was that whole rumor about the Ace, you know, which was another Nokia phone supposedly. That was bigger screen, I think, and had some more business functionality. So that might be, you know, what takes the place in the U.S. of the 800. We just don't know what they're going to have in the U.S.
I find this uncertainty to be very
uncertain.
Disturbing. Yes, you know, that's what I don't like. I don't like the lack of clarity. I had hoped that Nokia World would come and go, and it would answer the questions, and it answered some of the questions, of course. But not all of the questions. I think that Nokia probably is going to come to the U.S. market with some of those other phones, too. I don't remember the branding on them, but the S40 phones.
The Asha.
They just announced. Asha, yeah. Asha, I mean, those look nice. I don't know if there's a place in the U.S. market for that. I mean, but I assume there is. I mean, I tend to focus on smartphones personally, but I'm sure there's a market for lower end phones that do a lot of the same stuff, you know, have Facebook and a nice web browser and all that, and email capabilities and so forth. So, you know, hopefully we'll see that.
I asked at the show about those. You know, I went up to the booth where they were showing them and said, are these going to come to the U.S. too? Because it would make a lot of sense. And they just weren't ready to answer. Nope.
I just don't like that. I just wish there was more certainty there.
Too many mysteries.
Maybe they are beholden to the wireless carriers. Maybe it's AT&T and Verizon and so forth that they want that chance to announce stuff. I have been told that we can expect the Nokia U.S. plans to be announced at CES, by the way.
Oh, good. We're going to do Windows Weekly from CES. Are you going to be there?
You know, I wasn't going to be there, but I'm thinking now that I will go.
Yes, you must go. And Mary Jo, you must go. And we must all go. Come, we must all convene. It is the gathering.
I hate Las Vegas. Oh. I go as seldom as possible to Las Vegas.
Come on.
Las Vegas doesn't hate you. I go to Vegas
like four times a year at least. I can't escape Vegas.
We're not allowed to hate Vegas. Even if we did, we're not allowed to. I'm going to Vegas on Monday. Actually, you'll be in New York on Monday because the Mango event is Monday in New York City, right, Paul?
Yeah, I'm not clear what the event is exactly. My understanding is that it's possibly an AT&T launch event where they launch those U.S. phones, possibly only on AT&T. Not a lot of clarity here. So there is a Windows Phone event in New York on Monday. I'm going.
And Mary Jo is going. Who's throwing this event?
Microsoft.
So it's a Microsoft event, not a Samsung or HTC or Verizon. It's a Microsoft event. All right.
And you know, I think it's got to be more than just an AT&T launch because they're bringing Andy Lees, who's the president of Windows Phone, to this event, and they're also bringing Jill Belfiore, you know, who's the corporate VP in charge of Windows Phone. So if it were just, you know, hey, we're launching AT&T, we already told you about the phones, it would be kind of a waste for them to come for that event.
Mm. Okay.
So let's see.
Maybe Microsoft's going to announce tablets.
I don't think so.
No.
There's another great story in the Jobs biography of going to a birthday party. I guess it was a friend of a friend who worked at Microsoft on the tablets. Bill Gates and Steve Jobs are both there at this dinner party. And the guy whose party it is starts telling Steve Jobs about Microsoft's tablet plans. And Gates is quoted as saying, he's giving away our intellectual property. I don't know why I didn't stop him. I mean, he's the boss. He could have said, shut up. But apparently this is the 10th or 11th time that this guy has harangued Jobs about, hey, you should license our tablet. The tablet's going to be great. And of course, what's the reaction? What's the response? Jobs starts thinking, maybe we should do a tablet. What a mistake. They don't say the name of this guy, but I got to think that he is just, his ears is burning. We'll talk about tablets in just a second. We are talking, of course, about Windows and Redmond and Microsoft and all of that with the experts in the field, Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com and Paul Thurrott from the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Before we go much farther, can I tell you about our barbecue? You may not like Vegas, but you really should come out here to beautiful downtown Petaluma and take a look at our setup. Let me see if I can find that. Where's the... Where's the lower third for this? I'm going through them all. It's here somewhere. There it is. Whew. That was a. What's going on? Paul just shot somebody.
I'm good.
Sorry. I think he shot somebody.
I took care of that problem.
It was that guy you were just talking about in the tablet
blender. I heard the gunshot. Anyway, we're going to... Let's edit all that out, right? No, if you're seeing this, we didn't edit it out. We were talking about Ford. We're going to have some barbecues a week from Sunday, the 13th of November, and then Sunday, December 4th. You're invited. If you can make it to the Petaluma area, starting at 1:30 on the Sunday afternoon, we've got a tent. We've got permits from the city so we can block off part of the street. Ford's going to bring vehicles so you can take a look at some of these amazing Ford vehicles. And we're just going to have a blast. You can come. You can watch the end of the Tech Guy show. The twit, and we're going to that will be the first time that we've assembled the cast and staff for our new gaming show, Game On, with Brian Belmont and Veronica Brushwood. No, that's wrong. Brian and Veronica will be there, and we'll be. I don't think we're going to actually do a show. I think we're just going to be rehearsing and trying stuff so you could be part of the kind of the genesis, the work that goes into making a brand new show. This should be a lot of fun. And, of course, you have to request tickets because there will be some demand for this. I think we only have room for about 50 people. So go to our website, twit.tv. You'll see a link there to request tickets. And pick the date, the 13th of this month, the 4th of next month. And while you're there, you know, you're going to see these amazing, Ford Sync, the My Ford Touch, these amazing vehicles. Ford just announced that they're going to start taking orders in some dealerships for the 2012 electric Focus is a car I've been waiting for. I'm so excited. So excited. Of course, it'll have the voice-activated sync in there. That's you know, you talk about Siri. This is like, I've been for years, since I bought my Mustang in, 2009 or 2010, I've been talking to my car. And I'm not crazy. The car actually does what I say. You could set the cabin temperature. You could say, where's the nearest gas station? You could say, play the Rolling Stones. You can say, navigate to. And it, by the way, you know, I keep using GPSs in other cars, and they're just terrible. This one is great. This is, it's, they've just done a good job. Now, with the new App Link that is part of the new Ford Sync, they've got an API for apps. So you can control your smartphone, Android, iPhone, and let me check, because I would guess that that would include a Windows phone, because after all, the Sync technology is based on Microsoft's car platform. You can talk to your phone and say things like, open Pandora, PlayStation Classic Rock, bookmark this song, thumbs down on this song, thumbs up on this song, all without taking your hands off the wheel, your eyes off the road. You just press the Sync button and you speak to it. They also have a Stitcher. If you like to listen to podcasts like this one, you can play Windows Weekly. You don't have to even have downloaded it ahead of time. It'll play it. OpenBeak will read your tweets to you. I mean, this thing is incredible. Check out all of the new technologies, the latest stuff that Ford is putting in their vehicles at Ford.com/technology. It is truly amazing. Let me look at the App Link. They say here, I think it's, I don't know if it's Windows Phone. It is Android 2.1 Plus, iPhone 3GS or later. BlackBerry's the latest available BlackBerry OS. How could they do that? We got to get them. We got to get the Windows Phone support in here. That's a love for the Windows Phone. Ford.com/technology. Do check out their amazing engines that give you performance to die for, but still great fuel economy. Of course, the hybrids, and I'm so excited about the electric. I can't wait to get my electric Focus. The Bliss warning system with cross-traffic alert, the active park assist, the adaptive cruise control, and on and on and on. Technology is number one at Ford, and I think these vehicles are so great. Take a look, Ford.com/technology or your local Ford dealer. And don't forget our barbecue coming up a week from Sunday. Go to twit.tv and click the link to sign up. Paul Theroux, Mary Jo Foley are here. We are talking about Microsoft, of course. And is it possible Nokia will be doing Windows 8 tablets? Paul, you say it is.
Well, it's possible.
Anything's possible.
Yeah. Well, you know,
you don't think so?
They've left it open as a possibility. That he commented publicly on some interesting stuff that Microsoft is doing with Windows 8 and tablets, and didn't say outright that they were not looking into doing that.
Would Nokia be a good partner for this, as opposed to a PC manufacturer?
Yeah, in the sense that Windows PCs are sort of melding into what Microsoft calls Windows devices. And if you accept the fact that Windows 8 will be the basis for some future version of Windows Phone, yeah, I think it makes some sense. I mean, I think a Windows tablet, especially an ARM-based tablet, has as much to do with a smartphone as it does to do with a traditional Windows PC. So, yeah, I think that's something that might be of interest to them. I would point out that Nokia did make a netbook a few years back that didn't sell particularly well. So they do have some history there. That didn't go, you know, extremely well for a Nokia, but this is a different kind of market, a different kind of product, so I could see that happening.
Yes, that's an interesting point, is that these tablets are more akin to the phones. They're consumer electronics devices more than computers.
Yeah.
If you think about, you know, how much money did Microsoft pay Nokia to do the whole licensing deal? And it makes me wonder, you know, maybe they also said, hey, and since we're paying you billions of dollars, you got to do one of our tablets.
Could you do a tablet? Could you just do it? Just
do it. Do you think in the contract it literally says "do us a solid"?
Come on, we gave you a billion. Do us a solid. Make a tablet. What could it hurt? It's just a big phone.
Yeah,
it really is.
It kind of is. Yeah.
Would the tablet? I guess it would run Windows 8 though, not the Windows Phone interface.
Right,
makes it more like a PC. What do you think? Yeah. I don't know if it's in here. I'm really looking at these, the Asus, the Acer, the ultralight mobile computers. I think these are really beautiful. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to be selling all that well, though.
Oh, they still. They're,
is it
they're
too early?
One of the things that Intel was very upfront about was that there were going to be three generations of this chipset over a year.
Yeah.
And that the very first version that comes out, you know, and that's the devices we see today, are running what is essentially an early version of a chipset that's going to get much thinner and much smaller and much more you know, power efficient and so forth. So I think by this time next year, we're going to see machines that run a gamut of sizes and shapes, and they'll all be wafer thin and all that kind of stuff. And I think we'll have more of a choice, but it's just early yet. I mean, I one of the themes I've discussed recently is this notion that people don't want something that looks just like something else, but isn't that thing.
In other words, the MacBook Air.
The MacBook Air in this case. That said, I think there are a lot of people in the Windows side of the fence who want a device like that, but they do want it to run Windows.
And yeah, I think that's eventually, unreasonable.
I don't see any reason why devices like this that cost in the $700 to $1,000 range can't sell very well. And I think they will over time. Even at the show I'm at, and granted, this is a weird little Microsoft microcosm here where you go to a Microsoft-oriented trade show and everyone around you has a Windows phone and, there aren't a lot of MacBooks, like you would see
with
the press.
That is weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But I've seen a couple of these Ultrabook-style machines as well as that Samsung Series 9, which is sort of a pre-Ultrabook, but very much like a MacBook Air in size and shape and weight and so forth. And that to me is telling in a way, because these guys are certainly influencers and would be the early adopter types. And those are the machines I'm starting to see, not the big honking Dell laptops that everyone used to carry around.
Right.
So,
I mean, when you travel, it is so nice to have a very thin,
it's the best,
very light computer. A tablet won't do it.
Right. I wonder, though, about the pricing on them. You know, like Paul's saying, that maybe the later generations will be more in the lower range. But right now, those Ultrabooks are pretty expensive. And, Apple users, okay, they're more accepting of paying a premium. They're kind of used to that idea. But I think Windows users, because of what's been happening with Windows PC prices in the past year or two, they're not used to paying the premium. And now when they see something, $1,500. Sure. Yikes.
Well, yeah. I mean, the point of these devices is that they're supposed to top out at $1,000. And that, of course, is not what's happening. So I think it will happen over time. We need to see the main, the big PC makers get into this market a little bit better, Dell and HP and so forth. And I think, again, just like any other PC type, you're going to see a range of devices and you'll be able to choose between different price points.
Is there one you guys like right now?
Of the actual Ultrabooks?
Yeah, the Acer, the Asus, the Samsung.
I look at them. Lenovo announced something that it hasn't delivered yet that doesn't look particularly interesting to me. I would still buy like a ThinkPad X1 over that. I look at the reviews. I pay a special attention to Laptop Magazine. I think they have the best mobile device reviews. And so far, the ones that they've looked at, 3.5, maybe 4 stars, they're not really at the top of the line. So, not really. I mean, when I went to Europe last month, I brought a MacBook Air. It had Windows on it, but for that reason you said, you want to travel light, and I just don't. I don't have a machine other than that is that small and light. So, that's what I did. I'm not saying I wouldn't buy one, but
I still have my machine I bought a couple years ago, which is an Asus, the UL30A. Yep. It was kind of like one of the first kind of going towards thin and lights. Came out, and I've been really happy with it. I would bet on Asus again. I think they're making pretty nice machines right now.
Yeah, that machine you have is striking. I know because I always ask you about it.
Yeah.
He always picks it up and says, "What is this again?
This is really neat looking. What is this?
I'd like one of those. Yeah.
It's the same thing it was the last time you asked. But but it's nice.
And he tries
nice
to run off with it.
It's like when you see somebody say, "Are you losing weight? Did you get a haircut? No, same. You look good. Yeah, same. I've become a real fan of the ultralights. I don't feel the need for an optical drive. I don't feel the need for huge hard drives, especially now that we're so cloud focused, whether it's SkyDrive or iCloud or whatever. I want to
see bigger machines like that. There's a rumor now that Apple's doing a 15-inch version of a MacBook Air. Huh. And that's the type of machine I want to see. When you get down to a machine that is incredibly light and thin, that opens up the possibility of getting a bigger one.
Right.
Because now you can have all that screen real estate, but you're still not weighing down the bag. That means a lot to me. And I would love to get something of that screen size, but of the weight of a MacBook Air type
machine. That's a good point. Yeah. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Windows 8 manufacturers. Dell is on the list. Yeah, of course. Windows 8 tablets, I should say. Mm-hmm. Dell is on the list. Asus is on the list. HP, now that they're back in the biz.
We never left. Hello. I'd like to know who the marketing genius was who said, let's pretend we're going to get rid of our PC business right before the holiday selling season.
Oh, that's so stupid.
You know? I mean, it's almost like that guy, you know, what was his name? Leo Apotheker or whatever.
Well,
the
that's
guy
who
they
did
fight.
It. It's that moron.
I could picture him on his way out saying, wait, wait, wait. You wanted me to save the company?
Oh.
You know, it's like he didn't get what he was doing. I think.
Not dismantle it? Not.
Yeah.
It's a profit deal. Oh. Yeah, he apparently didn't understand that very well. Yeah, you know, no, he was remaking the company and what he understood, which was services. And then along comes Meg Whitman and says, wait a minute. This is, you know what? It's interesting that she said they did. They actually did the numbers. What a concept on the PC division. And when
they didn't have to do that, but they didn't even have to
do
that.
It was obvious.
We already knew this thing made big money.
It was obvious, but she did the due diligence. And it took them 3 weeks to do all the spreadsheets. And they said, oh, lo and behold, not only is it a profitable division, but all our other divisions depend on it. That there is a ripple effect from all of the PC stuff into every part of our business, including printers, services, minis, business intelligence. It all comes from that. I guess we better keep it.
Classic. Classic.
It really inspires you with the power of corporate governance. These guys, they're the best and the brightest.
But don't you kind of wonder, okay, so they're back. Back in the Windows business. But what are they going to do for a tablet? You know, because
they're going to do what HP
has. They'll do what?
So, by the way, I just yesterday got an email from HP. And this is the classic HP. HP is the most mismanaged company that I'm aware of. They're just horrible. So they have a new version of that Slate PC. Remember this?
Right.
The one they announced and then never said they were selling, but they were selling it if you could find it on their website. And so there's a new version.
it's like a scavenger hunt. If you can find it, you can buy it.
It was the one that Steve Ballmer had held up that year at CES right. 2 years ago, right? 3 years almost now. And then it sort of came out at the end of the year, but then they bought Palm and, are they still going to do it and all that stuff. So the Slate 2 coming soon to a website if you can find it near you. And I looked at this thing. I'm looking at the specs. It doesn't say anything about battery life. They talk about a laptop that gets 11 hours of battery life, but nothing on the Slate. And I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. So I'll click on the link that they have to go learn more about it. And, of course, again, classic HP. It goes to a page on HP's website that's about some of their PCs, but has no information at all about the Slate 2. So I think that's what you can expect from HP. And
confusion.
They're awful. They're just awful.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What was interesting this week that I caught a couple of people had linked to this is Asus accidentally in their Q3 investor call put out a slide deck that talked all about their Windows on ARM strategy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, good. At least there's some people who are part of this. They're calling it WOA, Windows on ARM, the Windows on ARM Alliance.
Whoa.
Yeah. So there's hope there. And they actually said in their slide deck, we're going to have two products probably out by Q3 of 2012 that will be Windows on ARM.
Do you think this is a recognition in the Windows world that the tablet is really the future of computing?
It's funny you say that. The reason I'm here is I did a panel last night about Windows 8 and the weird resistance you get from the power users. And I had one slide. Literally one slide, and it said simply, "You are the 1%."
Right.
And what I meant by that
right.
Was,
good. I love it. Brilliant.
What you don't understand is that the other 90% of the world, 99%, you know, your wives and spouses, your children, your grandparents and your parents, all the normal people in the world want something simple. Right. They want something that just works. And that if Microsoft didn't make this bet right now, if they didn't really go out on a limb and do something completely different for them. That Windows might not matter at all 2 or 3 years from now.
Yeah.
And it's not so much that – I wouldn't say it so much as tablets are the future of computing, but rather that the simpler model of computing is the future of computing. And tablets will be one of those things. You know, phones will be one of those things. And there will still be traditional PCs and all that kind of stuff, you know, especially for content creators. But that most people need really simple stuff. They want Facebook. They want email and some light web browsing. And you can do that on anything. And it's not, we're not really living in a world now where aside, and it's tough to have this conversation with you guys because you, like me, you know, we have very specific needs and very specific applications and so forth. But normal people and people who are coming up through the school system today rely on online services more than they rely on applications. The notion of installing things other than simple apps on, you know, on a phone or something is I think, in many ways going to go away. My parents get a PC today, and it's complex for them, but they never do anything with it. And by anything, I mean they don't go look for apps. They don't do anything extra on it. They use whatever it came with. And I think for people like that, because my parents are normal people, just regular people, they don't need the complexity of Windows as it is today. All the goofy driver stuff you have to do and the Windows updates and, I mean, all that complexity. It needs to go away. And so I think that Windows 8 is a big bet and an important bet, and it's an important, admission on Microsoft's part that they need to change what they're doing, because otherwise they're going to cease to be relevant if they don't.
Yeah, that's why we're so interested, though, in seeing Windows on ARM, right? I mean, because I feel like what we've seen of Windows 8 on Intel, it's not really simpler in a way. I mean, you still got the old desktop experience there.
You know, ARM is the electric car. It's the future. And then Windows on Intel is the hybrid. It gives you the best. It's the kind of the best of both worlds. So it's good for power users.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Windows 8 on ARM would look different than Windows 8 on Intel? It wouldn't be the same?
No, sort of Microsoft's not saying that, right?
Well, but we assume and believe that it will be just the Metro stuff.
Kind of a stripped down tablet focused.
Yeah, an iPad version of Windows, essentially.
I guess that makes sense. Right.
But we don't know that for sure because they show when we saw a screen capture of it from Build, there was a desktop there on ARM. So
I believe that.
That would be a mistake. Do we agree that would be a mistake?
Yes.
There may be technical reasons why it has to be there.
They wouldn't do it for they'd do it for market reasons, right? For they would do it because they feel that the business market would not be comfortable with a tablet, Windows tablet have a desktop.
Okay, so. Giving you a desktop, but one that cannot run any of the applications that exist, is worse than not having a desktop.
You're right. It's an exercise in frustration.
It would be
Minesweeper?
I think it would
be better if it wasn't there.
Right.
Right. But I think the reason they're doing it is they want to continue with this idea and illusion, or whatever you want to call it, that there's only one Windows 8.
Right.
They don't want you to think Windows 8 on ARM, Windows 8 on Intel. They just want to say Windows 8.
Right.
Right? I'm just telling you, that's my guess why.
You're right.
It sounds like a Microsoft thing to do. I agree.
It does.
There's a transition you go through. I mean, you have to, you can look at other transitions, whether it was from DOS to Windows, right? Where, you know, Windows runs DOS apps for a long time, or 16-bit apps, same thing. Or on the Mac side, you know, that classic environment that used to be in Mac OS X, but is no longer in Mac OS X. You know, there's a transition period. You can't just kill everything and then call it Windows. You know, you have to have that continuation. And, of course, their corporate customers demand that kind of backwards compatibility. So I understand that there needs to be a hybrid approach, and it's okay. But I do think that, when you move just from x86 to x64, you go to 64-bit, some of the stuff gets dropped off, and there's a nice cleansing effect to that, that you're getting rid of some backwards junk, you know, this legacy crap that's in there. ARM is another wonderful chance to do that. If they could just cut that stuff off and say, look, we're not supporting it, you know, we're just not going to do it. I honestly believe that would be better in the long run, because you still have a choice. You know, for the people who do need that other stuff, you can get an Intel tablet then. If you need it for whatever reason, get the Intel one. If you want an iPad, but one that's like Windows, you know, get an ARM tablet. I think that's how it should be, but we just don't know how it will be.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, you can't just do the perfect thing always. Sometimes you have to be aware of market expectations, all that stuff. You can't do the technically right thing.
Microsoft has many masters. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, they can't make the Apple is able to be very decisive about things because, in the beginning.
Well, we'll see if that continues. I mean, you know,
they do a mainstream market now. So, with the Mac in particular, because it wasn't a huge market,
right?
They could move very decisively. And that was just something Microsoft could never do.
So we agree then that the best thing to do would have Windows on ARM be a tablet, a pure tablet interface. And I think Metro is great. Basically, take the, I don't know why you even do it, call it Windows 8. Take the Windows phone and blow it up. Isn't that really what an iPad is a giant iPhone? And all the apps are already written for touch. They're already designed to do that. Why not do that?
I agree with you 1,000,000%, and Microsoft disagrees with you 1,000,000%. They we're going to talk about this later in the show today about Courier and the lessons learned.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe we should wait for that. This has to do with Windows 8 and the choices they're making too.
Yeah, Jay Allard was right.
I don't think so, actually.
But. Oh, good. Debate. I'm starting to look like a seal. It must be this ball that I'm sitting on. Internet Explorer usage share drops below 50%. Every now browser is now in the plurality. There is no.
I've been traveling. I'm sorry. I've seen this headline, and this is not what I got from Net Applications. Is this data from somewhere else?
This is Net Applications.
It is Net Applications.
Yeah.
Because I looked at that, and I could have sworn it was 51, 53, somewhere in there.
Let's go to the tape.
So what it is Microsoft still has slightly more than 50% on the desktop. And, you know, this was a surprising statistic to me. There's like 94% of browsing is still being done on the desktop or on PCs and Macs, you know, and not mobile. I mean, when everybody talks about how stats are changing in the browser world, you always say, oh, yeah, because there are all these iPads out there and there are all these iPhones and Android phones. But this isn't what's happening.
So it's 52.6% on the desktop, which is still a big drop.
But that's the number. Yeah. So you're saying that by including mobile browsing, we can get IE below 50%.
Right.
If we work.
Well, that's a little cheap. I mean,
not that I'm trying to get it below 50%.
No, I don't mean of you. That's the story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And I think that's a legitimate story. I think you should look at it all together because, you know, people don't go, do one thing. Maybe some people do this. I want to use one browser here, one browser here, a different browser based on what platform I'm using. Yeah, I guess people do.
Do you call the Windows Phone browser IE even?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Okay. So, really, come on. Safari on iPhone is not Safari on desktop. IE on the phone is not IE on the desktop. They're separate apps, really. Let's be honest.
Well, I don't know. Actually, you know, it's interesting.
It's only.
Well, no, I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, Safari is the same core technology on iOS as it is on the Mac and on Windows. And actually, the IE engine is the same.
I guess the engine's the same, yeah.
Windows Phone. So, and I would assume that Google is going to move Chrome onto Android and make that the web browser there as well. So that will probably be the case there too. So I don't know. I mean, that may be fair to say that those things are all essentially the same.
What really skews it, of course, is that when you go mobile only, Safari on the iOS platform has 62% of all mobile browsing. I mean, it's totally dominant. IE
has 0.16.
You can barely see it. It's that little sliver.
It's like a 1 pixel wide sliver.
Which makes sense because of the market share of Windows Phone. Right?
So really, I think, I think you have to break out the desktop and mobile.
So this is saying, if I'm reading this correctly, that Safari mobile is 620 times the size of IE. It's like,
if I do my math correctly.
I am not a mathematics expert.
Well, what's funny is even Opera Mini is 100 times bigger.
So. Who is using Opera Mini? What is that?
It's horrible. Well,
Java thing?
What Opera has done is they've made a browser for mobile platforms. It's used on you have it on every.
Where are you using that?
Every platform. It has. There's a version for Android, iPhone. I don't know about Windows Mobile, but
can we just
BlackBerry?
Vote
I bet a lot of BlackBerry. I think almost all BlackBerry users use it.
We need to get rid of this stupid stuff that's on the edge of everything.
It's 18%, Paul. It's not on the edge of nothing.
It's going to be trending down.
It's bigger than Android's browser.
That's ludicrous.
It is on Windows Phone 7. All right. So it's available for all the platforms. And then when Opera is done with Opera Mini is kind of what Amazon's going to do with their browser on the Kindle Fire is they've cached stuffs to speed it up.
I think that if IE mobile growth could just, grow by 400% and actually beat other – then they would probably be in pretty good shape.
It's that so other that's killing you right there.
It's literally four times as big, isn't it?
Yes.
And, you know, it's funny because we don't even know what that stuff is. That's like great. It's like that Japanese browser's in there.
Yeah.
I think Sleepnir.
Yeah, Sleepnir Mobile. Yeah.
Browser. What's that one called? Browser Plus or something?
Well, on both Android, on both Android and iPhone, there are a number. There are numerous, you know, half a dozen or more third-party browsers. And Android especially. One of the reasons I think the Android number is so low is that Android users often don't use the stock browser. They use Dolphin or Xscope, or I mean, there's dozens of other browsers.
Kind of the nature of that platform. That's good. I think Google is going to be smart about that and turn that into Chrome. And
yes,
I bet people
they are
start using it more.
Supposedly, that's the next step. And I think once it's Chrome, it'll do well. So I think
that was the takeaway from this, right? Is Chrome is growing by leaps and bounds.
Yeah. This is desktop worldwide, and
desktop.
Chrome is 17.62%, catching up with Firefox right now.
Yep.
I really feel strongly that this picture you're looking at now is going to change in a year or two to be Chrome, Firefox, i.e. roughly, you know, a third each. And then Safari maybe will have whatever the, you know, up to 10% or whatever. But I think those three are going to be the browsers that people use. I think that's how it's going to split out.
You're right. I think you're absolutely right.
You know, we're talking about IE losing, you know, going below 50. But I think the big story is coming 6 months or whatever is going to be Chrome surpassing Fox.
All except for Mary Jo. The boys,
no, I agree.
The boys on this show use Chrome. Mary Jo, you still use?
I use Chrome.
You use Chrome too?
I'm a total Chrome user.
I don't know
user.
Why I thought you were an IE user. Okay.
Nope.
So we're all Chrome users. And, you know, Dvorak used to do that test. This was many years ago, maybe in 2001 or 2, where he'd ask people what browser they used. And if they used, search engine they used. And if they used Google, he kind of knew, oh, yeah, they're paying attention. If they're using Alta Vista, it was like, yeah, yeah. And I think nowadays that's a geek validation question. What browser do you like? And if they use Chrome, they're paying attention.
Right.
I just use Chrome because it's faster on my Windows 7 PC.
It's faster.
It's efficient and
it's secure.
I run into issues with other browsers, and when you run into too many of those issues, you just stop trying, you know. And IE just doesn't have some of the stuff that's really simple and or just built into Chrome. And
it is interesting, though, that we can talk about browser preference when really a browser that does the job right is completely transparent. It's just a window onto a website. And really, you shouldn't really even know what you're using. And there is yet this strong preference. I'm not sure why that
is. Because, like I said, when you use another browser and it gets in your way,
crashes.
Then you notice it. You
right.
don't want to notice that damn thing.
Right.
You know, and that's... Right. I by all rights I should be using IE and I just can't do it. It drives me crazy.
What is it that it doesn't do right? Does it not render pages right or?
Yeah, so no, it's fine for that kind of stuff. It's weird because I have very specific things I need to do for work, right? And they involve interacting with these web forums and so forth. So IE doesn't have such things as built-in spell checking. It doesn't have a very simple way to paste as text.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of stuff. Chrome just does this stuff, and what I just said
kind of works
like
as you expect it to work. Is that what you're saying?
Right. And when I can't make IE work the way I want it to work, I just lose interest. And people will send me these little here you can use this, you can use this. You know, yeah, I get it. The problem is I blow away my PC installs regularly, and I reinstall things. I bring Chrome up, and it just works. I don't want to have to reconfigure and reinstall add-ins and do all that junk. I want it just to work, and Chrome is the one that just works.
I do have to point out, though, that there's absolutely no reason for browser loyalty and that this could change at any minute.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, Firefox was this for many years.
Yeah, and it's not now.
No.
Because of all the memory issues.
And it's important to note, I mean, Microsoft has done a great job improving IE. IE9 is a lot better than IE8, which was better than IE7. But, you know, it's just they've improved the process, they've improved the product and all that. But, you know, Chrome is on this treadmill where they're just releasing updates, you know, regularly, and it's always getting better.
Yeah, I don't even know now what version of
Chrome. I think it's on 15.
I think it went to 15, yeah. But, you know, every time I check, it's something else. So
yeah. You don't have to worry about it.
They don't. That was smart, too. I think Microsoft a little behind on this one as well, where they're still announcing it's IE9 instead of saying it's IE.
Right.
And let the versions fall where they may.
Firefox figured that out, or Mozilla did.
They still pay a little more attention than they should. They were the last to shift, but neither Safari nor Chrome ever say what version number.
If you're a business user, you prefer to know the version number.
Yeah.
Right, because you've got to test your apps with things and make sure they work before you deploy them to your whole company.
Do you not see Chrome deployed in the enterprise?
You do, but I mean, that Microsoft really pays more. I would say they pay more attention to the enterprise customers than these other companies do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a lot more.
Is that going to be good for them or bad for them in the long run?
It's good for them right now. That's where they're making their money.
It makes them an enterprise company. It makes them like a Salesforce or Oracle. They are an enterprise company. And I think that that may be one of the things. Well, it's for sure boring for everybody but Mary Jo. But no, I think that that's over the last couple of years that we've been doing this show, that's really what's happening to Microsoft. And I think Microsoft does not like it. Is going kicking and screaming. They say, but we have Kinect. We have Xbox. You know, we have Windows 8.
They're so desperate to be a consumer brand. We have Skype. People love Skype.
But really, maybe they should just accept it. Because what happens is things like enterprise require them to continue to number the browsers. So they have to continue to do little subtle things that underscore they're an enterprise company, not a consumer company. Windows 8 desktop, perfect example.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to, you know, the old question that keeps going round and round. Should Microsoft be two companies, three companies, four companies, you know, or should they still just be one? They want to stay one company, but I don't think it makes as much sense as maybe it used to for them to do that.
I don't know if we have this in the show notes today, but there is some older Microsoft Vision videos, you know, that were highlighted this week. And it's interesting going back to the old videos because you can tell that Microsoft very much saw themselves as a consumer brand.
Yep.
And that
they still do. That one we showed last week was all about the living room.
Right. But I think the difference is today people look at Microsoft doing that stuff and they don't get it. But I would say back in the late 1990s, Microsoft was sort of a consumer brand, right? They were fresh off of Windows 95. They were kind of a big consumer brand. There was this thought that, you know, they could do this online through the MSN services, that they would be successful with consumers. So you see, like, the teenage girl runs home and gets on her bed and she's got a laptop and she's, you know, messaging people on MSN Messenger and she's interacting with the MSN Explorer interface. And this is how people were going to be. And of course, flash forward 10, 12 years and people are using iPads and iPods, not, you know, Windows PCs.
It's kind of hard to, takes a certain amount of luck, I would guess, to predict the future.
Nobody would have made the bets that would have gotten them rich, you know, back then.
Right. That's right. None of us would be here if we knew that because we would have, you know, we would have bought the right stocks and would have retired.
Yep.
The fact that we are still working shows we have no freaking clue.
Exactly. So please listen to us every week.
Hey, we don't, you know what? I've learned, I got out of, I mean, it's funny because you get demanded, and of course, we probably will do it on our end of year episode. They demand that you predict the future. But I, you know, I've gotten to the point now where I say, I had no idea. No,
I'm wrong about everything.
I'm always wrong.
Future, of course.
That's why we're pundits, not, you know, executives. Because we'd have been hired by now if we knew what was going on.
I don't think it's possible in the midst of history occurring to accurately understand
what the
impact is going to be.
We're the frog in the pot.
Yeah.
Although John Barry Barlow was on Triangulation a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, I actually tested that. I put a frog in a pot of cold water and started heating it up, and he said the frog jumps out.
Oh.
So there. I thought that was great. The guy actually said, you know, I wonder if that's true. And he tested it.
I would be afraid to cook a frog.
I think no frogs were harmed, he's lucky. He's damn lucky. Could have gone terribly wrong. We're going to take a break and come back. Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott. are you getting sick there, Paul?
It's dry here.
The thing. I don't go to. I agree with Mary Jo on that in that one respect. I get sick every time I go to Vegas because it's dry.
I should just go to CVS and buy a $20 humidifier and put it next to the bed.
I always bring a humidifier. You should ask the hotel because they often have these. You know,
I always have two cups of water next to the bed because I wake up in the middle of the night with my tongue is shriveled up.
Those $6 bottles of water can add up. I can tell you that right now. Actually, the Mandalay Bay, they're probably $12.95.
Well, it's like tap water. It's That's awful. That's awful.
Hotels often have their own humidifiers. Usually there's three or four. If you get there early, you can get one. But I, you know what? Somebody ought to, we always have all these little portable electronic, you know, power strips and stuff. Somebody ought to have a portable humidifier. It would sell very well among the geek crowd.
You know, I have like it's got to be like a 1,000-gallon tub in there. I should just fill
just
the thing
fill it
with water.
Yeah.
Leave it there, you know.
Water. Put a frog in there. Just see what happens. We're going to take a break. Come back and talk more about Microsoft. We got some big items on the agenda. Microsoft Courier being one of them. I cannot wait to hear this debate. And there may be a new Xbox. This is a rumor I'd like to know more about. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Leo Laporte, add Go to Assist Express. If you're in the business of supporting clients, colleagues, customers, you know how important a good remote support tool is, because the last thing you want to do is phone support. Believe me, I do it on the radio show every day, and it's just, or every weekend, and it's just painful. So hard to talk people through a fix over the phone. With Go to Assist Express, it's great. You just, you know, you give them a link. They click the link. You don't need to really support this very well, very much. You don't want to support the support tool, right? You got other things to do, like fix the problem. So it's simple. They don't have to, there's no IT help needed, no port forwarding, nothing like that. They just run the, click the link, Go to Assist Express, installs the software, and you're in. You can chat with them while you're fixing their computer. You could do things that, of course, every single support person wants to do, things like 8 sessions at once, unattended sessions. You get an assay, press a button, it says, here's the operating system down to the 0.000 number. Here's the background software. Here's the security software, all of that stuff. And with unlimited use, Go to Assist Express lets you support as many people as you want for one low flat rate. But this is the lowest rate of all. For the next 30 days, free. If you go to the website, gotoassist.com/windows. You know, I'd like you to do that because, of course, I don't ever want you to buy something you don't try first. That's what we, that's kind of our philosophy here at TWIT. All of our advertisers offer free trials. But also, you'll see how fast and easy it is to install. You'll see how simple it'll be for your clients. Take control of the problems and solve them the way you know best with Go to Assist Express. GoToAssist.com/windows. Free customer service for you 24/7. 128-bit end-to-end encryption using SSL. All the things that you know you need. GoToAssist.com/windows. We thank them for their support. Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, Betty Jo Foley. Let me see. Let me look at the rundown. Microsoft spells out Android patent issues. You know, there's a demand right now from the demand that's coming from, I think, is it Samsung? Somebody is, show us the source code. That's what everybody wants to see. And we still don't see this. Apple, same thing. They're saying, show us the source code. Microsoft says Android's standing on the shoulders of others. They kind of join in with Apple. That's what Apple says. You copied us. Paul, is Google stealing patented technologies?
Yes.
Simply
yes,
put.
They are.
But how do we know until we see the source?
Well, I think the first indication is that many, many Android partners have simply cross-licensed this technology.
Well,
so
you could also, I mean, the counter-argument is, well, it's cheaper to license than it is to fight a big company like Microsoft. And notice Microsoft's not suing Google directly.
No, but neither is Apple, by the way.
So. No, both companies are maybe a little afraid of the deep pockets and the cross patents that Google has.
Yeah, right? I do that. I find that interesting. It may be a vagary of the law where, you know, Google isn't directly selling it or whatever.
Maybe, okay.
I don't know. I think we'll get there. I do think it's very important that these patents be tested in court and hopefully via Barnes & Noble or one of the other companies, Motorola. That will happen. So we'll see.
Do you think Microsoft or Apple will go after Amazon since they're using Android on the Fire?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a deep pocket company. And Jeff Bezos is the kind of guy who'd fight, right?
You don't think they will just because they're close?
Because they've already got them to sign a Linux license. So Amazon signed a Linux patent thing with Microsoft. Right. So I'm betting they're going to do one for Android too.
See, from the...
Right. Okay. I mean, I'm sorry. I think we're talking about the same thing. I mean, Microsoft going after them means they'll get across.
Getting a fee. Right. Yeah. Not necessarily
sue. Oh, yeah. They go, sorry, I thought you meant in court.
No, I did. I did, but you're right. That's the process is first you say, okay, pay up, And either they pay up.
Yeah, I mean, or first you have the carrot, and then you bring right. the lawyers, I guess.
From the, I'm just going to say, you see, the problem is that from the outside world, and I'll put myself in that box, users just feel like, well, look, yeah, I mean, you know, the Microsoft took the recycled bin from Apple's trash can. That's not stealing. That's
Leo, those are completely different things. I don't know why we have to re-ask that.
No.
When you put something in the trash and throwing it away.
It's trash. They stole it from me. I had it first.
Remember, OS2 had a shredder.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying, that's how it is. A good idea propagates. You know, Apple's suing over Slide to Unlock. Well, but from a consumer point of view, we want everybody to use the best ideas. That's the way that was makes products better. We don't. Nobody wants it that any smartphone that has a big glass screen is.
Slide to Unlock was number 3 on my list of reasons why you want an iPhone. So I could see where that would be a big deal.
Well, I guess, you know, if that's so your goal in life is to protect your intellectual property, which, of course, it is as a fiduciary responsibility of any publicly traded company.
You know, there's a feature in iOS 5 that was in Windows Mobile 6.5, which I thought was wonderful, which was instead of just, you know, you get a phone call or a message or an email or a calendar alert or whatever it is.
Yeah.
On most smartphones, you just kind of open it up and you have to go to that thing. And then Windows Mobile 6.5, a very short-lived and a little loved product, had the ability to go directly to those events from the start, from that lock screen.
Yeah, you slide down the notification screen and you can, and then you would just slide.
The same thing.
Yeah, I love that.
And that's, Microsoft should sue them.
No, nobody should sue anybody. Everybody just should say, use it in good health because we all love consumer. No. Am I wrong? We all love consumers. We all want to do the best. We want everybody to have a better experience. And so, you know, Slide to Unlock, go ahead, take it. I guess it doesn't
work
that way.
I think they should sue
them. Are you an attorney?
As if they don't have enough lawsuits.
I've always liked the idea of big companies going at it, you know, like Godzilla and King Kong or something. You know,
I don't, because all the money that they pump into lawyers' fees in these lawsuits is money that they would otherwise put into R&D and more innovation.
Yep.
But I understand. I guess we're stuck with this crapola system. But
yeah, okay.
I'm a hippie.
I mean, the way you know what I thought was interesting was there was a new interview with one of Microsoft's lead attorneys, Horacio Gutierrez, that came out in the San Francisco Chronicle, I think a week or so ago. And he really, really made it clear that Microsoft believes that the way the patent system works in terms of you pay each other, almost like mutually assured destruction, right?
Right.
I'll pay you, you pay me, everybody pays everybody, and this it's good, it works. And we're going to just keep doing that, and this is how it should work. It doesn't matter, is it ethical, right, wrong? This is the way it is, and this is the way
it is. The way it is,
we want it to be. We want this to be the
it
way
is how it
the
works.
Way.
It is how it works.
It's also notable in that interview. They asked him point blank, "Well, what exactly do you have that you know that?"
Yeah, they did.
Android is violating. He only said one thing, and I actually can't remember what it was.
Yeah, but it was something basic. Very small.
Yeah, it was a very basic thing, you know.
Yeah,
a method by which you can swipe the screen to occur, you know, cause something to occur.
Yeah, because everybody's thinking they're these big, all-encompassing patents, right? But they're not. What they're talking about is, like, we'll sell you a bundle of, like, 500 of our little tiny patents, and you pay one fee, like $5 per phone per,
actually,
you know,
I think it was sync-related. I think it was something to do with sync.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's how they're looking at it. Like, hey, you get this whole bundle of all these patents that have to do with mobile, and you pay us $5 per phone. That's it. You're all covered.
They're looking for a little something well, under something, the table.
Just give me a little something.
Little VIG. You know?
little bit. So here, ladies and gentlemen, is Microsoft's vision of what the year 2010 will look like. Are you ready
for this? It's like watching Back to the Future.
This is 2010 in your headlights, ladies and gentlemen. The evolution of real-time collaboration technology promises endless innovation and opportunity. Microsoft appreciates this opportunity to share its vision for the future of our real-time collaboration initiative. Tut-tut-tum. So you're on the you're at the airport in your Hawaiian.
Like more Hawaiian shirts in this than
in your Hawaiian shirts. Does this predate Twitter? When is this? When did this?
I believe this is this. Oh no, this is later. This might be 2004.
The near future. Now, they show these at sales events and CES and things like that, right? Video, Hawaii vacation.
Hawaii.
So he's looking at a video on his incredible Motorola.
By the way, on his Windows Mobile flip phone. That's good stuff.
And it looks like there's a chunk taken out of the upper left. I don't.
Yep. It's probably where his stylus goes, Leo. Don't laugh. That's probably what it is.
Yeah, apparently Greg Kinnear works for the FDA now. So.
Yeah. Presenting the seminar. Or Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin, yeah.
900 scientists attending the seminar.
Oh, I hate it when they hire actors to do this because they're so smarmy. Oh, he's getting a travel alert. He's
we had a team meeting.
Well, good Lord, that phone is bigger than a shoebox. Oh, here comes the stylus. By the way, that was another thing Gates mocked. I mean, Jobs mocked Gates endlessly for. He said, no tablet with a stylus will ever succeed. He says, we have 10 of them. They're called Fingers. Look at the size of that one, too. Urgent presentation, tap.
LOPC. Stylus.
Please tell me you'll be back in time for this.
Thank God 2010 is nothing like this. I'm really relieved.
The best part of that little segment you just showed is that the tablet PC she was holding had the battery removed.
There's a hole.
See the big, see the big hole in the back?
The hole where the battery goes.
It's good stuff. It's thin and light, Leo.
Yeah, because it has no power. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it's funny because this is what they thought 2010 would be like only, 6 years ago. And it's completely different than this. It is nothing like this. And it's this feels old. This doesn't feel modern at all.
Well, it has that sort of
his battery's early missing
2000s.
Too.
Look, it's got like Longhorn style dialogues.
Right. But you know, okay, so that underscores what we said earlier. You can't predict it's hard to predict the future, even for a company that's immersed in it, because there's disruptive things happen that you couldn't predict. You know, and so this isn't that far off, really, in conceptually in the idea that you're going to use a tablet more. And somehow it's going to connect back. This is really about the cloud in some respects. You know, he's on his tablet. This is GoToMeeting. He's on his tablet. You're seeing him in video.
To be fair, Microsoft's real-time communication stuff has certainly continued and even flourished, right? I mean, they do a lot of this stuff. And the Skype purchase kind of falls into this category as well.
Right. Yep.
Oh, this is awful.
That's so
awful.
Much work. The little tapping and the tapping, the tap, 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 and the
hit that little X. Hit it.
Oh, it's so frustrating.
Yeah,
it just gives me a headache looking at it. Oh, did you get it? Oh, you got. Wait, whoa, drag it over. Mm-hmm. There you go.
But some of the ideas are there, right? Like presence is there, right? You can see where people are and all. Yeah. So there's some things that were there.
Although doing a multi-person conference, you know,
right.
The only thing really wrong, really, is the stylus and the form factor of the. They just didn't get tablets, but they were right in the sense of how tablets would be used. I think this little UI things like this. I don't think anybody wants to do that.
I want a little picture of my face next to the cursor when I edit a document because I'm not clear who's editing it.
Right. Oh, it's me. Yeah. Oh, look, it's me. Everybody likes to see a picture of themselves.
Yeah, that never gets old.
All right. I'm sorry. Somebody in the chat room gave me that link. Thank you, chat room. And I'm glad to see this came out. Let me see the date, if I could find the date on it.
I believe it's 2004.
It was uploaded 2007, but I bet you're right. That was just when it was uploaded. It's not on a Microsoft site. It's just something.
No, it's got that Longhorn vibe to it. So it had to have been before Vista and
Vista. You're right.
Before the switchover, because they ended up not making Vista look like that. So it was from that conceptual period, you know, the Longhorn stuff.
So Kinect, you know, I have bought more Xboxes than any other gaming system.
That could be a good or bad.
Well, some was because of Red Ring's death. There was one that after the fourth Red Ring, I just said, I'm not going to fix it anymore. I know it's free to fix it, but I'm not going to fix it. So I bought another one, and we just bought an Elite for our new gaming show. And, of course, now when I buy an Xbox, and I imagine this is true of everybody, you buy the Kinect bundle, right? You'd be crazy to buy an Xbox without Kinect. Yes?
Or would you?
Or
I don't know. You know, I Mary Jo may feel differently about this stuff. That Microsoft just celebrated the one-year anniversary of Kinect, and they put out this concept video. And I take exception to this in some ways because the current Kinect is so inaccurate that I'm sure it will get better over time. But the truth of the matter is the Kinect requires a room where you can be at least 6 feet away from the sensor, preferably 10 feet away for it to work properly. It doesn't see black people. I don't know how else to say that.
Is that true? Just,
yes.
It only works if you're white?
Yes, unless you're in an extremely well-lit room.
That's kind of a flaw.
Yeah, I have personal experience with that one, so I can tell you that that's
how embarrassing is that? Invite a friend over and Microsoft Kinect doesn't see him.
Sorry,
talk about race blind.
I know, please. So when I see these, and people will say, well, but you know, Kinect is the future, and motion, you know, control is the future, and all this stuff. And I think, well, maybe, but the problem is, you know, for a PC interaction right now, I happen to be. Well, actually, I'm right now about as far from my monitor as I am at home, so maybe. You know, whatever that is, 2.5 feet, something like that. You know, try positioning yourself 6 feet away from a computer and see how well that's going to work.
Kinect work, though, if you're closer? I mean, can't they?
I think they can improve it. I'm just saying, you know, we have to it's so bad now. I'm just confused by why we should assume that this is going to be a lot better anytime soon. I think the voice control stuff is important, and that's one of the things, you know, when I look back to read what I wrote in my review a year ago, I sort of highlighted that, you know, you spend a lot of time, you're in front of the computer doing this, and you're trying to get it, and you move your hand, and it kind of loses the cursor, and you go back, and after a while, you say, screw this, this is stupid. It's easier to use the controller, and it's easier still just to
talk it.
Now,
I've only done a little voice with Kinect. Do you have to shout? Because it is across the room.
No.
You can speak in a normal voice? Okay.
Typically, well, here's the thing. So if you're playing a video game, you're not going to be interacting with voice because that will be loud.
Right.
But the typical scenario is you're just using the UI, and so you'll just say Kinect, play the movie or whatever it is, and that stuff works fine.
This seems to be the agreed future of television that you talk to it.
I do think we're heading to that future. You're going to walk into a room and talk.
Yep.
Things and it's just like the way Siri works, or the way the Kinect works today, where things will be listening for your voice, and then based on the first thing you say, they'll perk up or not. And I think that will be a very common way to interact with, you know, computing devices in the future.
A lot of people though want to know: are they going to build something like the Kinect sensor into PCs directly? Right. So people ask all the time: is Windows 8 going to automatically recognize gestures and voice? Using something like a Kinect that's built into PCs.
I'm thinking no way.
Really?
I'm thinking no.
They would have to improve that sensor dramatically and then be able to fit it into a laptop screen.
Mm.
And I just don't, I don't, I'm not, I just, I see no evidence of this. So I don't, I don't know, but I don't see any way that could happen within the Windows 8 timeframe.
This was
what
technology.
What they're going to have next year. Sorry, Leo. I was going to say, what they're going to have next year is the, software development kit for Windows, right? So they said sometime early next year, probably around CES, you'd think, they're going to announce there's a software development kit to tie Windows PCs to Kinect, and you can use it under a commercial license, not just a hobbyist license like you can now. And they're expecting this is what's going to have the whole explosion of new kinds of apps and business apps for Kinects tied to PCs.
I think you're kind of. I have a feeling that if you go inside Microsoft, there is the feeling that we would like to do this, and no, we don't have the hardware to do it right now.
Sure.
Do you think that there's a Skunkworks project to kind of? They bought Kinect. It came from a third party. It's an Israeli company, and I don't think they've put much into it since they got it.
Well, you know, who could say? I mean, I
so somebody must be somewhere working on this, making it better. Yes.
Yeah. So there have to be two things occurring. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's the Xbox group with Microsoft Research, right? That's who's working on it together.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing MIT Media Lab kind of stuff.
You want to be able to improve the thing you have, right? Because that's what's around. It's going to be with us for a few years, and then you want to be working on the next gen version, which should be smaller and lighter and thinner and all that kind of junk. And hopefully, it can be put into computers as well. But you know, the current version. You know, I don't know. I mean, I've tried. I can't even use it in my office because my office is too small, and my living room is not particularly big. I mean, we're directly dead center of the TV. You can't use it. You have to use it at an angle. You know, just to have enough space. There's just not enough room in my house.
It's for people with Microsoft mansions. Come on.
Exactly.
No, but I mean, that's clearly not going to be it. I mean, that's a consumer product. They have to have something that sits in the monitor, just like a camera now is in many monitors and somehow. So what makes the Kinect work? It's not merely a camera. It also has a depth perception.
Depth and motion sensor and it's funny, the very thing that makes Kinect special, the ability for it just to sort of see you and work without you having to hold anything or whatever, is also its biggest problem, because there are a lot of instances where directly interacting with an object makes sense. You know, you can play a piano on an iPad screen using multi-touch and it works, but you cannot play a piano like this in the air, and that will never work. I don't care how good you are at it. It will never work.
Right.
That's just not going to happen. So, you know, they show in that one of the videos, they show someone doing like an air cello. That is the most ludicrous, absolutely impossible, silliest thing I've ever seen. And for them to be showing that as if this is what's coming next year, you know.
Oh, and I like this one. Let's have Kinect in the operating.
Yeah, the patient is dying. Hold on. I'm trying to get Kinect to respond. Hold on. I'm over here, Kinect. I'm sorry. And I don't mean to be cynical about this. It's just people. I've been really dumbstruck by how accepting people are of this stuff. Like, this is going to happen.
Right.
You know, everyone is so negative about Microsoft in general, but for some reason, this is the one that's going to work, you know?
Well, we want the future. We want the future to be here.
We all want the future, but if you've used Kinect, you know that this stuff is not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I'm sorry. I wish it was better, but it's not.
I want to find these videos. Where do they? Is it on the Press Pass site? I'm looking for it.
Yeah, you're right in the right place. It's somewhere in one of those.
Okay. Yeah, because I want to see what Microsoft. I mean, they're really pushing this. Kinect effect reaches far beyond gaming, they say.
It's the Kinect effect.
The Kinect effect.
And it's like the type of thing that turns you into a zombie.
Well,
it's the Kinect effect.
I think that that's the problem, is that you get PR people writing this stuff, and then the technologists who have to implement it go, there's some issues.
Right. All you have to do is use it. It's fun for the simple little games that they have. It's fine, I should say.
But that's my question. Isn't it possible for them to implement, to improve, to make this?
Well, yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah. But again, it's going to change a lot, right?
Musical instrument. This is not happening.
Yeah.
It's not happening. I don't care how good it gets.
Yeah.
Because you have to be hitting something for this to make sense.
Right.
You can't play an air version of this instrument. That's not possible.
You can't play this. You can't do. So here's some B-roll. I don't know if this is it. This is what Microsoft gives television stations so that when they do a story, what's next? Soon, people will be operating on you using their Microsoft Xbox 360 and Kinect. So I don't know what this is. This is all just old B-roll. This isn't it either. Dang nabbit. Kid-friendly games, TV ad. Let's see the TV ad. That's going to be for sure what's next.
God help.
Here's the cello. There it is. It's a TV ad. Well, no, Paul, you didn't say it was a television ad.
How could they have put this on TV? This is even worse than I thought.
Okay.
Look, here's stuff you can't do with the Kinect.
We started with a sensor.
Yes.
That turned voice and
yes. And it magic. Worked.
Xbox. Play.
We thought, this will be fun to play with.
Yeah.
And it was.
Yeah.
Daddy, my arm hurts.
Something amazing is happening.
That's not going to happen.
Starting to imagine things we hadn't even thought of.
Really?
I'm sorry.
Really?
I have nothing but disdain for this.
Really?
I solved cancer with Kinect.
Helpful things.
Why not just use it?
Did you see how close he was to the sensor?
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
Nor her. That's
more beautiful things.
So this is what happens when you let an ad agency.
It also has to be above you, by the way, for it to work.
Right.
Can't work below you.
So this is not the existing Kinect.
No,
this is next,
all fake.
The next Kinect.
Which is why, even though the world keeps asking us what we'll
do. Oh, now we're going to disarm a bomb.
Using Kinect.
Kinect, I really need you to see me now. No pressure.
But don't play the cello if you're an African American.
There's got to be a law against advertising that. That's
only in the UK.
None of that works.
Here in the United States, there is no law against lying in ads.
That's crazy.
I thought there was, and then I started doing ads.
God. this is why I become cynical. What happens? I want to believe in technology. I want to think that the future is always going to be better. And then they put out an ad like that, and I want to strangle somebody.
Nivek V says, Paul, they're talking about possibilities. It's possibilities.
Yeah. Let me give you another possibility. None of that is going to happen. None of it.
Yeah. I mean, that gets around the false advertising because they're not saying this is what you can do with Kinect.
We put the Kinect SDK in the hands of Windows developers, right. And now we have a bomb-sniffing robot based on Kinect. Yeah, sure we do. Sure we do. Unbelievable.
You're a gamer. That's why. You tried to play Call of Duty with it, and you couldn't. That's your problem.
When the Nintendo Wii first came out, one of the first games they had was the Call of Duty that was new at the time. Right, I think it was Call of Duty 3. And they did have a unique way of using that nunchuck controller where you could actually make the grenade throwing motion and that would throw a grenade. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. You know, I like Call of Duty. I'll play this game. And I have to tell you, after three unsuccessful efforts at lobbing a grenade, I thought, this is the dumbest thing. This is so dumb.
Well, technology should work. You shouldn't have to. This is one of the successes of the iPad is there's no manual. It's intuitive and it just does what you think it's going to do. You shouldn't have to, you know. Okay, now wait a minute. No, your arc is not quite right. If you could just move slightly to the left.
I think my point is, if you're going to throw a grenade, just throw a real grenade.
At the advertising agency.
It just doesn't work.
Hey, speaking of concept videos, one of my favorite Microsoft concept videos of the last few years is that Courier video, which we loved. There was a lot of question at the time about how conceptual is this? Is this something they intend to do, they want to do?
All right, so if there was a conceptual scale where reality was on one side and utter fantasy was on the other, the Courier was on the utter fantasy side.
Oh, really?
I disagree. Yeah. No, you're wrong.
I think they were closer to making it than we thought. Wasn't there a battle?
There were 300 people or something on the team, weren't there? Or 100?
This is Microsoft. There are 97,000 people working there. 300 people doesn't mean they have more people working in their cafeterias.
There was a Courier prototype, at least. I mean, it was like a lot of people at the time, including me, said, okay, it's just a video. But it's not true. It actually did exist. And it was on its way to becoming a product.
The story goes that Steve Ballmer sat there and looked at the Courier and looked at Windows 8. You've got Sanofsky and you got Allard. And didn't even call Bill Gates.
It's common sense.
Didn't even call Bill Gates and said, Bill, what do you think? And Bill said, forget it, do Windows 8.
Because we could build another device that nobody buys, or we could go with the thing we know works. You know, the Courier was such an awful idea. It's an awful idea.
Well,
I'm not defending the idea of the Courier. I mean, and if you guys haven't read it out there in the chat room, Jay Green did a really great story, two-part story this week on news.com, where he talked to 18 people at Microsoft, some who worked on the Courier, some who didn't. It's a very interesting read because it kind of dispels some of the notions about the Courier, you know, the people saying it was nothing but a video and all that. It really existed. And they supposedly, as Jay Green reports it, they almost were ready to start rolling this out in production. I mean, they were super close.
That close.
Yeah. And then Ballmer shows up at Pioneer Studios and says, guess what? We're not doing this.
Well, they had to pick one.
The problem with the Courier, though, is that it was just another thing, you know. It didn't fit anywhere into the whole ecosystem. You know, we all remember when RIM came out with this playbook thing and how they were ridiculed, still are, for not having email or calendar built into the device, right? We can all admit that was really stupid. That was what Courier was. It was the same thing.
I have to say there's a little failure of PR here, though, because we've seen all this about Johnny Ive and the Apple Design Studios. This is the Pioneer Studios where stuff like Courier was being worked on. I mean, this is...
Yeah, but you know what? This place, I'm sorry. These people, Jay Allard and all those people, that thing was just a giant money pit. And these were guys that were just hemorrhaging money, not selling anything.
But you know what I'll say? Paul, but I'll say in defense here, Jay Allard is the one who basically is credited as the father of the Xbox, right?
Right.
I mean, the way the Xbox was created was set it up in a skunk works away from the rest of Microsoft, and they built it separately and didn't even tell a lot of the people at Microsoft they were doing it. And okay, so that was kind of his MO.
But what has he done since then?
Well, the career.
He did the Zune. He did the Zune after that. Okay.
And by the way, I would also, you know, not to be a jerk about it, but, you know, the Xbox 360 is also the single buggiest consumer electronics product ever made. It required $1.1 billion not product recalls, but in free warranty repairs. You know, it was an endemically buggy product. That they didn't get right until the new version that came out last year, or by my math, 5 years after the original version.
Yeah.
So I don't know that this is like a legacy of success. I think going with Windows was in this case the right choice.
Yeah. So what my kind of thinking back on this after I read Jay's story this week was, you know what this is kind of like now? This is like, should we use Windows Phone OS or Windows 8 in tablets? If you are at Microsoft, guess which team wins every single battle?
Windows wins it. Right.
And that's the lesson.
Sinofsky comes off a huge success with the Microsoft Office. He's making a money.
This video you're showing, by the way, none of this is real.
No, I understand. And this was part of the concept stuff we saw. The idea of the tablet was there were two sides. There was a touch side and there was a stylus side. You could drag things from one side to the other side. Mm-hmm. I think it's a kludge, and I don't think it would have been a hit. But So I think they made the right choice.
The problem is, you know, people are into technology. They look at this, oh, why did they make this? This is so awesome. You know, look, any of them would have lined up to buy one of these things, you know.
This is a nightmare. This is worse than the HP touchpad. I mean, this is a technical nightmare.
Microsoft does have some strengths, and I feel like I've been criticizing them a lot today. But, you know, this is a company that makes platforms, and they're really good at it. Having this thing somehow be part of a platform makes some sense, but having it exist out on its own as yet another thing is not
right.
That's not the type of thing Microsoft should be doing. They're not good at that.
Right.
And that came out in the story too, that, you know, basically the choice was, do you want this courier thing that runs sort of a kludgy version of Windows that's not really Windows, right? Or do you want Windows? Okay.
Yep.
Choose.
And it was really a one-off. It did feel like a one-off thing that had no future, really. You know, it didn't tie into anything.
It was kintastic, Leo.
Although, you know, so there's a company, though, called Tapose, TAPOSE, that is making something that looks a lot like the Courier for the iPad.
Huh.
That this also was mentioned in Jay's story this week. And what's really interesting to me about the company behind this is Jay Allard's been advising them. And he's also financially backing this thing.
Interesting. So he's like the Jeff Raskin of this. He says, no, it's going to happen, and I'm going to make sure it does.
Maybe. Jeff Raskin made the copycat, you may all not remember.
Yeah, no, he did very similarly. He was the guy who had the original Macintosh idea. He did not want a mouse. It was
he didn't want a GUI.
Yeah, so he was forced out at Apple by Steve Jobs, who then made the Mac. But Jeff Raskin, who I think was a brilliant UI guy, created a device for Canon that was just a miserable flop based on these ideas.
Yep. But it was his original notion of the Mac.
There's a certain purity when these things get tested in the real world. And so if Jay Allard's right, who knows? Maybe
he's not
huge.
It doesn't matter.
If you want to see it, Leo, look for Tapose on the web. There's a video of them, and it looks a lot like the Courier, except minus the stylus, I believe.
Huh. They even say the word Courier on their webpage. In fact, that's
real. And when I tweeted about them this week, one of the founders tweeted me back and said, hey, maybe we will do one for Windows 8 tablets. So maybe this Courier app will come to Windows 8.
So this is interesting. So this all goes on the iPad UI on top of it. And it's a Kickstarter project.
Yep.
Huh. So where's the video? Is it...
I think it's somewhere on... More About Us, if you see that.
Oh, okay, let's go about Us. Yeah, let's see if they have a video there. Yeah. Split interface design. This is the Courier. Isn't that funny? Maybe it's on the Kickstarter. I bet it's on the Kickstarter project.
Yeah, I think it's on the Kickstarter.
So they had a goal of 10. They got 1,200 backers. They raised the money they wanted to raise. So
that's exactly as much money as this device will make. So that's
you know why this guy's doing it? Because Kinect can't see him. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that.
Yikes. Wow.
He's angry, and I would be too. So let's see. You know, there's a big thing going on about Mike Arrington being a racist because he basically got ambushed by CNN. Mm-hmm. That documentary comes out, I think, in the next couple of days. And I never would have thought this, but I am actually starting to feel sorry for Mike Arrington.
I don't know that I could feel sorry for Mike Arrington. What happened?
So CNN said that, well, we want to do an interview about startups in Silicon Valley. Of course, this was back when Mike was with the TechCrunch and doing Disrupt and all that stuff, and they interviewed him. Yep. But what they didn't tell him ahead of time was the interview is all going to be about why there are no African-American or minorities or Hispanics in the startup area. And they In fact, Bitkasa, which is a huge – he's an investor and a big supporter of, has an African-American founder. But they took a quote out of context, and that's
Soledad O'Brien, who was a reporter.
And I worked with Soledad for years, and I love Soledad.
Yep. She published the emails that they sent to Arrington, and it was not an ambush.
Well, okay, but Mike says that email wasn't sent to him or his assistant as the previous emails were. It was sent to AOL. He never saw that email, and it was only one paragraph in a much longer thing. So, I mean, I think that he has – the only thing that they use is the thing where he says, I can't think of any African-American founders or minority founders in Silicon Valley. And then later he says in the interview, I remember – oh, yeah, wait a minute. What am I thinking? There's Bitkasa. I am not a guy who – by the way, I was watching this Tapazay video. There's no – in this video, it's just two guys talking the whole time.
Oh, it is. Oh, yeah. I saw one where there was a picture of it working somewhere.
They have check out our very funny Tapazay skit.
Oh boy!
Here's the skit. Is this what you're thinking about? The skit?
I don't know.
A skit.
But I have to get this off my chest. My friend Ben is crazy. I mean, loony Ben, cuckoo crazy.
I hope these guys get the money. Speaking of cuckoo crazy, and make a courier. See, he's got a little paper courier in his.
Oh, there's nothing lame about that. Oh, I wish I had one of these.
This, they got 20 grand on their Kickstarter project for this. Wow. This is cute. I hope they get the money. I'd love to
this
see it.
This is what happens when the United States has 10% unemployment.
Yeah. You know? Entrepreneurs make videios like this.
You know, these guys who are founding this, they actually work for Boeing.
You're kidding.
They're engineers. They're engineers at Boeing in Seattle. Yeah.
Well, I could see somebody looking at those original Microsoft Courier videos and saying, I'd love to have something like that. Especially an engineer who's doing that kind of work. That might make a lot of sense.
It makes no sense.
No sense. You know, you're right. By the way, Apple will never approve this app. Not a hope in hell. No, really. You know why? Because it's a windowed interface.
What an awful outcome that would be.
There's not a chance because it changes the UI. I can't think of a single case. So what? Like for instance, they want to bring up on the left side of the screen maps, and on the right side another app.
Yep.
Apple's never approved anything anywhere near that. Maybe they will, because who knows? But I do think that that's a. I did read Jay Green's article, and I thought it was very telling and interesting. I love this stuff, like the behind the scenes of what really happened. I think that's great. So, speaking of Xbox, mm-hmm. Paul says there may be a new Xbox.
There will
in the
be
works. Project 10.
Well, actually, the interesting thing about it is what I'm hearing is it's going to come out for holidays next year.
Uh-huh.
Meaning that they would almost have to announce this at CES, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
You know, if it's that soon.
Ooh.
And so that's my rumor, is that I expect that we'll hear something about
and
that.
And it'll be Metro?
Yeah, all Metro. Embedded Silverlight, which I don't understand what that even means, but that's what I was told. And that they were going the Apple route where they wanted this thing to integrate very tightly with Windows 8 and with Windows Phone. And, you know, this is actually a problem with the current Xbox. As they've updated the UI, they really haven't done a lot to update the integration bits. You know, you still navigate your home network in a very old-fashioned way if you want to get at content that's on one of your PCs or whatever. And it's always been very disturbing to me. You know, if you have an iPhone or an iPod Touch and you plug it into an Xbox 360 today, you can access the media that's on that device and play it through the Xbox onto your TV. But if you have a Windows phone and you plug it into your Xbox, it does nothing. It can't see the device. It can't copy it, you know, or play any of the content. It can't do anything. And so it's, you know, this is the integration bit is the piece that Microsoft has always done poorly. And I apparently they intend to fix that with this next version.
I mean, it's widely believed this was the secret to Apple's success, was they had end-to-end integration of all their products and that you entered the Apple universe and never came out.
Yeah. The other thing we're starting to see is, you know, when you look at these modern video games, you know, the new Call of Duty is coming out next week, but games like Battlefield or Gears of War 3, you know, they are attractive looking, but they're not actually any better looking than the games that came out a year ago, and are significantly less good looking than their PC alternatives, because PCs, of course, can have higher resolutions, and there's a lot more tweaking of the UI in games where you can, you know, set detail levels and do all that kind of thing. I think we've reached the point where the current generation Xbox has topped out with what's possible. You know, that developers spent years figuring out ways to eke out more and more performance and better graphics and all that, and now we have kind of reached the apex. Like, there's nowhere else to go.
End of the line.
So new Xbox is coming.
Although you're still going to get the dashboard update for the existing Xbox, right? That's.
You know how I know a new Xbox is coming? I just bought one.
Yeah.
That's how I know. I'm looking at it right now. It's not even out of the box.
Paul, you know, when you mentioned the Silverlight connection, it's making me think that has to do with the Xbox Live for TV stuff.
Right.
Because that's supposedly built around and using Silverlight. And that's going to be part of this dashboard update.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
I love this. I mean, that's a product.
Yep.
That's a product. It's gaming, but it's television integration. Interesting.
Dashboard updates, I guess people who signed up for the preview of that are going to get it in the next couple days, the dashboard update test.
And what about the rest of us?
The rest of us?
2003. Yeah.
No,
I believe also it's being delivered over time. You know, there's an update we're getting now, but I think there's one coming in the spring that will be that final version of the one they've been showing that looks like Windows 8. I don't think we're getting that until next year, but this dashboard update that's coming now, I think, is more around the media stuff and the ability for it to do the internet TV and all that.
Cool. I'm excited. I can't wait to see what they've done. I mean, you know. Every TV in my home has an Xbox hooked up to it. Some of them aren't.
Yeah, we have so many Xboxes in my house. Yeah. It's almost embarrassing. But
let's take a break. We're going to get your picks coming up in just a bit, but I want to do some picks right now for Audible.com. Audible, of course, you know Audible. We talk about Audible all the time. It is the audio bookstore I practically live in. You know, we just got an update on the number of Audible titles. 100,000. 100,000. They're just new titles all the time, partly because every book publisher now realizes you got to do an audio version of your book, but also because Audible themselves have been going back to the catalog and recording great audio editions of classics, science fiction books that were never recorded. That's part of their Frontiers series and more. If you're not yet an Audible member, please go to audible.com/windows and check it out, because I can't say enough for Audible. I listen, I have the Audible app on my iPhone and Android phone. Someday soon, we believe Windows Phone 7 will have it. You can, of course, download the audiobooks as well and play it back on many devices, including your computer. I am just a big Audible fan. I'm listening right now to the Jobs biography, almost done with that. And the reason I could finish a biography that's that long in a little more than a week is because of Audible. I listen in the car, I listen at the gym, I listen when I'm cleaning house, I listen when I'm going to bed. I love it. But your recommendation, Paul, is actually another book that I'm putting on my list now. This is the book about Jeff Bezos. Are you reading this right now?
I am.
It's not very long. I can get through this one in a day or two. It's only 5 hours and 39 minutes.
Yeah, it's not... he's not as interesting a character as Steve Jobs in many ways. But I think it's fair to say that he will influence the tech industry in ways that are maybe, you know, somewhere near as profound.
And he is a difficult character. I mean, he's in some, you know, a lot of these entrepreneurs.
He's the anti-Jobs in many ways. Yeah. Right. Right. You know, he's very cheap. He thinks in a very, kind of a logical fashion, I would say, rather than an intuitive kind of emotional fashion like Steve Jobs does. So interesting contrast. They're very interesting books to read back to back.
Yes.
Because they're so different. And yet they both sort of have lorded over the tech industry in some ways. And it's interesting. You know, it's sort of like Gates and Jobs, you know, that there's a different approaches you can take and that can be equally successful. So
this is
very interesting, very timely.
Richard Brandt, who also wrote a book called Inside Larry and Sergey's Brain.
Yeah.
So this is not new, but these are short reads, quick reads, which is nice. Sometimes after reading a book that's as long as the Jobs book, you want something, a quick hit. And that's the beauty of Audible. There's a huge variety of business books, classics, fiction, history, kids' books, too. Oh, it's great for the kids. Audible, if you're not a member, audible.com/windows. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month. Your first month's free. Your first book is free. And yours to keep forever. Cancel at any time. But I don't think you're going to want to cancel. There's so many. New John Grisham.
Yay.
Lots of great stuff here. Mindy Kaling of The Office fame. She has a new book. Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns? I got to play a little of this because I love Mindy Kaling. She narrates part of this anyway.
Back. Chubby for life. I don't remember a time when I wasn't chubby. Like being Indian, chubby feels like it is just part of my permanent deal. I remember being in first grade in Mrs. Gilmore's class.
People don't know that Mindy Kaling, who is a kind of a, you know, kind of a smaller character on The Office, is actually one of The Office's best writers and producers.
Yep.
Gosh, there's so many good things on here. Sometimes you're in the mood for a laugh. Sometimes you're in the mood to get serious. Sometimes you're in the mood to learn. But Audible's got something for every mood. Join today, audible.com/windows. And we thank them for their support for Windows Weekly. Okay, Paul, let's see here. We got tips. We got picks. Let's start with our software pick of the week. This sounds more like a Mary Jo than a Paul Thurrock.
You know, it's such an awful name, isn't it?
Took that one.
Yeah, Mary Jo wants this one. Paul.
Hey, you can have the enterprise. I get small business.
All right.
Mary Jo, he's nibbling away at your beat.
He is. Yeah. I don't like this.
I don't know.
Sorry. No, this is something I've been waiting for a long time, ever since I saw it demoed back at TechEd. And what it is an add-in. I guess, is it add-in or add-on? I think it's add-in for Windows Small Business Server 2011 Essentials. Remember, that's the home server-based version of Small Business Server, which is really stripped down. There's not a lot going on there in the server itself, but they have various add-ins that extend the functionality. And one of the big ones we've been waiting for is this Office 365 integration module. It does all kinds of different things, but it lets you manage your Office 365 account from within the Small Business Server dashboard, but also integrate your accounts back and forth. So when you create a user in Small Business Server, they become a user up in Office 365 as well for your email that is an exchange, you know, contacts, calendaring, the SharePoint, and all the link stuff. So it's sort of an all-in-one integration dashboard or integration point into the dashboard, so you can do everything from a single place. So that's in beta now, and hopefully the final version won't be too long, but we've been waiting for this for, you know, 6 months, so I'm glad to finally see this happen, and hopefully this will be a big deal for a Small Business Server.
There's also an update for your software pick of the week for Windows Phone to the Facebook app.
Yeah, you may recall, you know, back when Windows Phone first came out, I did a Windows Phone app pick every week for a long time. And I did that because, you know, it was a new platform and I wanted to highlight the apps that were particularly good. And one of the really good early ones that we probably had as a pick a year ago was Facebook. And Facebook on Windows Phone is a really good app. It wasn't actually created by Microsoft, but Microsoft paid a company to make it. Now Microsoft maintains it in cahoots with Facebook themselves. So obviously, Facebook is moving forward. There's a new version of Facebook that just came out on the iPad, and the mobile apps have been improving. So they recently released a Facebook 2.0 for Windows Phone, and this is the first one that has some Mango-type features via push notifications out to the Toast, with the Toast notifications you get from the top and also on the tiles. on the application tile for the first time. You know, if you've been using Facebook or Windows Phone for a while, you know that you get a big blue F, and it just is static and it sits here, but it just does nothing. It's not
better than the big blue F U.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. But now they have. Now they have push notifications on.
I really love these live tiles in Mango. I think this is great. But it does require Mango to do that, though, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Good. Actually, you know what? I'm not sure about that. But most people
are going
to
get Mango.
I'm actually not sure if it requires Mango, to be honest. But I only have Mango now, so I don't really have any way to figure that out. But.
Right. Facebook, it's free. Get it. Does it update the People Hub, too, or that's...
No, I mean, the People Hub integration is built into Mango, so that stuff's already there. This is just for the standalone.
Yeah. And now, Mary Jo Foley, who gets truly a true enterprise product that brings intelligence to your computer.
It does.
Actually, to your SQL Server.
Indeed. Yeah. So SQL Server 2012 that I've talked about on a couple of our previous episodes. We didn't really know what kind of SKUs Microsoft was going to have when they came out with this. And we found out today, in fact, that they're going to have one that they've never had before called the BI, Business Intelligence SKU. So this is really interesting for people who are all into analytics. This is a SKU that highlights all the new BI tools that they've got coming out with this release early next year. And they also talked today on the Microsoft website about how they're going to be pricing SQL Server 2012, which I think caught some people by surprise because they're moving from Server plus CAL, which is client access license pricing, to core-based licensing for some of their SKUs. Now, the BI SKU is not going to have the core-based licensing, so you're not paying per core as to how many cores you have on your server. But the other SKUs, Enterprise and Standard, are going more towards the core-based pricing, especially the Enterprise. That's the only way you're going to be able to buy it. So if you're interested in SQL Server, go check out the post I did today about how they're pricing and packaging up SQL Server 2012.
Did they announce a release date for that?
They've said the early part of 2012. That's it.
Like March?
Yeah, maybe. Well,
like January, April.
I think it's going to be like March.
March?
March. Yeah.
think March.
Okay, March.
March.
I wasn't sure if they announced it.
I think it's going to be March. Mary Jo... Mary Jo has also.
We're betting, man.
Good, you heard it here first. Mary Jo also has a code name pick of the week. One of my favorite cities.
One of mine too. Where I will be in 2 weeks. Vancouver is the code name pick of the week, and this actually has been a previous code name pick of the week of mine. But I brought it up again this week because finally it came out. Microsoft wasn't even talking about what it was. But this week, if you go to the SQL Server Labs site on Microsoft, you can download what's called codename Social Analytics. I don't know why Social Analytics is a code name, but what it does, what it is is a tool that lets you integrate in Twitter, Facebook, blog, RSS feed, all these kinds of social inputs, and integrate them into your business app and then do an analysis of what they mean. So they have a client. It looks a lot like TweetDeck that's part of the product. And they've got some built-in sentiment engine that Microsoft Research developed. So it's pretty interesting.
I love you.
When you read tweets, are they more negative or positive, right?
That's actually very challenging, very difficult to do.
Yes, very difficult. This is right now just in a preview form, and we don't know when it's going to be out in final form, but this is what Vancouver is, and now you can go get the bits if you're interested in seeing where Microsoft's going with cloud-based social analytics.
Very cool.
I try
just in case you're interested in that, Paul.
I have no idea. What is she talking about, Paul?
You see, I'm so glad you're on the show. I would be unable to talk about this.
That's just fascinating. Mary Jo Foley writes about this stuff all the time. And, you know, if you are not a Mary Jo Foley reader, you really ought to be. Her blog, allaboutmicrosoft.com, updated. Gosh darn it, every 5 minutes, it seems like. She wrote 3 posts during this show. all about Microsoft.com. Practically did. You must go there. You also have to go to the Super Site for Windows. That's Paul Thurrott's website, winsupersite.com. He's also news editor for Windows IT Pro and the author of the fabulous Inside series, including Windows Secrets series, including Windows Phone Secrets. I guess you can't trademark secrets. Anybody could write a book called Secrets.
You think?
Yeah. Twit podcast secrets. Leo's not wearing any clothes or something.
I don't like it.
I don't want it. I don't like it. And I don't have to do it, says Balthra.
I do like what Microsoft's doing with patents.
Sue.
Mutually assured destruction.
Sue. Yeah. Well, we're a little worried because, we're doing this new gaming show starting a couple of weeks with Veronica Belmont and Brian Brushwood. And it's been hard to pick a name. And sure. I love the name Game On. It's positive. It's upbeat. It has the word game in it. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. And there is an Australian podcast about table games called Game On. Dice and Dungeons and Dragons, that kind of thing. Magic, the Gathering. Sure. So I thought, well, golly, am I, first of all, I know you can't.
You know those guys don't have any money.
Yeah, no kidding. No, but that's not how I was thinking. I was thinking, is this going to conflict? Will this confuse people? And I think it's not. I mean, it's a podcast, but I think people will understand that they're different.
Oh, they're different, all right.
And I'll make a deal with those Aussies. We will not cover table gaming. So there
you go. This is like the deal Apple made with Apple Corp back in the early 1980s. We promise we will not make any music.
No music. And more revelations for this book. So they paid Apple Corp $80,000 to license the name Apple way back when.
Gave them an investment.
Yeah. And said, said, we won't make music things. And of course, then they did do iTunes and became one of the biggest players in the music industry. Apple Corp came back and sued. $100 million it cost them to settle that lawsuit.
I'm surprised it didn't cost them more than that.
I know.
Oh, seriously. I mean,
that actually
iTunes
is a good deal. Did I get that right? No, I'm sorry. $500 million. It was $500 million dollars. $500 million. $500 million. Paul, I want you to be part of our LAN party. When we start, the name of the show is Game On.
That's fine, but it has to be Xbox 360.
Yeah, no, that's why I bought the Xbox 360. We're going to have the server. And we also, sometimes be PC gaming, sometimes console, sometimes both. And the name of the LAN party show is Shut Up and Play, which I think is a good name, and nobody has.
Yep.
For reasons I can't understand. So join.
I will embarrass whoever you wish.
Fragtastic! Actually, we're going to have we're going to set up the big TV and the Kinect in the living room set because I think that's when I'll be playing Dance Central 2 while you guys are fragging each other.
Wow! That's the gamut right there.
Right there, we're running the gamut. I'm going to do a casual gaming segment called Casual Encounters with Leo.
I'll be racking up headshots, and you'll be doing something
ladies.
Else.
Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, thank you. Thank you all for joining us. We do this show every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at twit.tv. Please tune in live, but if you can't, we always have downloads for you, audio and video available wherever fine podcasts are, including the Zune Marketplace, iTunes, and, of course, at twit.tv, where you can subscribe. Do subscribe. That way you'll get them all. And thank you so much, guys. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.